Hello for Lover, this is Pacific Waves from RNZ Pacific. I'm Susanna Sriswiki. Coming up.
It's ridiculous, you know, all this time taken up charging them and convicting them.
Frank Bainimarama is feeling on top of the world as he avoids jail time. Also,
every government agency engage effectively with the Pacific community, not just that ministry.
Up to 63 roles are on the cutting block at the Ministry for Pacific Peoples, and Pacific rugby stars are inducted into the Hall of Fame. A Fijian professor of governance says Frank Bainimarama's court sentence is a joke after Fiji's former leader avoided jail in a corruption case. Frank Bainimarama was given an absolute discharge in a packed magistrate's court in Suva after last week being convicted of perverting the course of justice. The 69-year-old was sentenced alongside suspended police chief Sitiveni Giliho, who was given a $1,500 Fijian dollar fine and without conviction. Alicia Foon spoke with USP Governance and Social Studies Professor Vijay Naidu.
It is surprising. The sentencing is like the minimalist kind of approach, but the magistrate has been sympathetic to both the former prime minister and the former police commissioner. I don't know if some kind of deference or what, because she's the one, if you recollect, had acquitted them of all charges, and the referral by the chief justice who found them guilty back to the magistrate's court has then given her the authority to make the decisions regarding their sentencing. You know, as I anticipated, I did not expect the magistrate to sentence them for the maximum of, you know, 10 years, case of Bainimarama, 5 years, in the case of Giliho. But what the sentence now is quite farcical, because, you know, these persons are found guilty and they are given sentences that, to say the least, is ludicrous, you know. So, you know, he's court-free. Also, that there'll be no conviction against his name, so which means that he can stand in the next election.
Do you believe this was a fair and just process?
Well, I don't think it was particularly fair process from the perspective of the prosecution, but from the prosecution of the defending lawyer, Bainimarama and Giliho, this was a very satisfactory outcome for them. So depending on which side of the political spectrum you are sitting on in Fiji, you know, you'll decide on whether the decision or the processes and the decision were biased or not. My own view is that it's ridiculous, you know, all this time taken up charging them and convicting them and then sentencing them to, you know, what is a joke, really, is actually quite mind-boggling. And it's quite apparent that the case actually shows that there is a rule for the powerful, influential people in the country and those who are disadvantaged.
What does this mean for other leaders going forward and people of power, like you mentioned?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is that we have had former prime ministers sentenced and convicted, serving terms in jail or as extramural prisoners. So Mahendra Chaudhry has done his time, so has Garase. So I think much depends on, you know, who the magistrate is and what factors they take into account. Of course, like everywhere else, you know, we have magistrates and magistrates. Their decisions can vary quite considerably. I don't think Bainimarama is out of the woods yet, because there is a whole string of other charges that he'll face in the coming months. Who knows if he, to the court, magistrate's court, and the magistrate are different, or he's different in the next case, then he may be imprisoned. Personally, my view is that when you think about other public servants who have been, and politicians who have been jailed for a minimum of 12 months for abuse of office and conflict of interest in corruption, this outcome in that context is not particularly fair. in terms of, you know, the sentencing, and I think reflects fully on Fiji's judiciary.
The magistrate's reasoning was poor health, that he could have a heart attack in prison?
Well, you know, look, Mr. Lasani Angarase was not a well man when he was sentenced, and he was sentenced a little more than the 12 months that he was sent in for. I think this is very special treatment myself, you know. I think there are issues around that. Contextually speaking, he got the majority of votes as an individual politician in the December 2022 general election. And since this court case began, there have been a number of gatherings where his supporters, both civilian, military and naval, have turned up to show their support for him. And one wonders whether that context also influenced the magistrate's decision.
He is very popular, like you mentioned. People are rooting for him and do support him.
Well, yes and no. I don't think the majority indigenous Fijian voters support him anymore. The ethnic minorities in the country certainly support him, and overwhelming majorities. It's not rural, all rural people. There is an ethnic dimension to this.
And I want to mention as well that he was sentenced alongside suspended police chief Sitiveni Ingilio, who was given a fine of 1,500 Fijian dollars without conviction as well. So what does this mean for Ngilio's future?
It is all very farcical, you know. But, you know, I don't think Ngilio would ever be appointed in the police force. And I can't speak for the military. He's got his own proclivities, so I wouldn't know. But under the current government, I doubt it very much that he'd ever get any position in the public service or in the statutory body. I don't think he's actually employable, full stop.
Fijian state prosecutors are appealing the sentences. New Zealand's Ministry for Pacific Peoples is proposing a 40% staff cut. The country's largest trade union, the Public Service Association, says the ministry has informed staff that it's looking to shed 63 of 156 positions. Whenua Whanua has more.
Opposition MPs have slammed the decision, which they say will undermine the delivery of services to Pacifica communities in New Zealand. Labour MP and former Deputy Prime Minister Carmel Cepeloni says the massive cut indicates a move to get rid of the ministry.
We have to wonder whether these are the first steps towards abolishing ministry. I mean, it's undermining the funding and resourcing to an extent that it starts to look like they are trying to make it as ineffective as possible and potentially justify what ACT wanted from the beginning, which is the disestablishment of the ministry.
It's the latest proposal by government to cut staff across the public sector. Within the last week, the Ministry for Primary Industries and the Ministry of Health proposed cuts amounting to over 400 positions. National Secretary of the Public Sector Association, Dwayne Leo, says he is seeing apprehension among many union members.
You've got hard-working public servants here that are working with their communities, working in roles, and for months now, they've been anxious about what potential changes are, and a lot of them, their jobs are on the line. So, you know, there's high levels of anxiety, they're frustrated, their morale is low.
Prime Minister Chris Luxon says the cuts are needed to, quote, right-size the public service. In response to criticism about cuts to the Ministry for Pacific Peoples, Finance Minister Nicola Willis said government agencies should be engaging with the Pacific community, not just the Ministry for Pacific Peoples. Willis says the ministry has grown significantly in recent years, including growth in contractor and consultant spending.
Well, it's our expectation as a government that every government agency engage effectively with the Pacific community, not just that ministry, and we want to see that expertise and skill across government we think that the growth that's gone on in that ministry was excessive.
Public Sector Association National Secretary Dwayne Leo disagrees. He says the cuts will have far-reaching consequences for the health and well-being of Pacifica families in Aotearoa and across the Pacific.
We know that Pacifica families are more likely to be in overcrowded, unhealthy housing situations and challenging environments, and they're also struggling with the current cost of living. The ministry plays an active role in supporting housing development, the creation of training and employment opportunities, and supporting Pacifica languages, cultures and identities, and also developing social enterprises. This is all going to suffer.
The extent of staff cuts will be revealed next month when the New Zealand government is expected to announce its budget on May 30th.
Nearly 12 years ago, the then Catholic Archbishop of Rabaul in Papua New Guinea, Francesco Panfilo, took on giant Malaysian logging and palm oil developer Rimbunan Hijau on the side of the beleaguered landowners in East New Britain. RH, as it's mostly known in PNG, was accused through a subsidiary, Guildford, of making unfair contracts with some landowners, ignoring other landowners, taking many trees illegally and planting oil palm where they shouldn't. The Archbishop led the battle to try and have these contracts renegotiated, but this process was stymied by the COVID pandemic and what he sees as legal manipulations on RH's part. RH is notoriously difficult to reach for comment, but RNZ Pacific is continuing to pursue them. Now retired and living in the Philippines, Francesco Panfilo is still involved in the battle and told Don Wiseman he hopes the PNG Supreme Court will next month direct RH to renegotiate.
Apparently, they were delaying. So in 2019, we asked for a second mediation. And also in the second mediation was agreed that we would proceed. The unum sicite is out, but the mediation was between RH and the other three groups. And so then, of course, unfortunately, COVID came, played in favor of the Rimbunan Hijau. And delayed, you know, we could not do anything at that time. Then at the end of 2020, I retired, I left. And in 2021, I came to the Philippines, where I am now here. Of course, I keep in touch. And fortunately, before renegotiating, there was a ruling, a judge ruled. There is a technicality in itself. But this, as usual, it delays one thing and the other and the other. Now we brought the case to the Supreme Court, and now we are waiting for a decision there.
If I can just clarify, yeah. The case went to the Supreme Court, or you sought a hearing in the Supreme Court?
Yeah, there is no ruling yet.
Okay, so the Supreme Court has considered it, though?
Yeah.
And what were you seeking from the Supreme Court?
What we want is to oblige RH to renegotiate, because that is the agreement that we came upon, that we had. We have to renegotiate the agreements.
Because the agreements were so
one-sided, there is no doubt about it, I don't know. Besides, strictly speaking, if the landowners were to go to court on specific issues, they could have so many cases. For example, the environmental destruction, because I believe that there was an international group that made an investigation about the environmental damage.
I have seen the report, and it's extremely damaging.
It's understandable why RH tries to delay them to avoid. And then, for example, the rental fees, what were supposed to be agreed before, they have not been receiving anything for a long time. What RH is doing is getting some people from the different groups who are not really democratically elected by their group, but they give, RH gives them money, you know, and for scholarship and this and that. According to me, RH should give money to the rightful landowners, for example, for school fees and this and that, but that nothing is happening. The physical condition, the way the workers are treated.
At this point in time, what's the critical thing? Is it this report that you're expecting from the Supreme Court?
The decision of the Supreme Court is supposed to obliging RH to renegotiate. We have to sit down. It was agreed to renegotiate in 2020. And then they went to court on some, I cannot explain what exactly Arechi did, which is that sometimes they use technicalities or this and that, and I'll not be able to explain that. So the case, we brought it to the Supreme Court.
The first ever Pasifika Rugby Hall of Fame event recognises the efforts of rugby legends and stars in helping develop the sport across the globe. From Tui Fa'asisina's Sir Brian Williams to the ever-promising Mark Talia, it's an occasion that's considered long overdue. Ilyasa Tora was at the event and has the story.
What a night! What an event! Sir Brian Williams, one of the seven legends being inducted, says it's something that is deserving in recognising the efforts of Pasifika players all over the world.
Well, I think it's well documented now that Pasifika players are making a great contribution to rugby, not only in New Zealand, but throughout the world. You look at the Wallabies, you look at the home nations and in the UK, there's so many Pasifika players starring in the various teams. So I think it's timely and appropriate.
The man they call the King of Sevens and the Wizard, Fijian icon Waisale Serevi, says he is honoured and to be representing all Fijian rugby players as an inductee and thanks all players and coaches who have helped him along the way.
For me, I thank God Almighty for being the source of strength, the talent that he gave me to be a rugby player. To be inducted into the Pasifika Hall of Fame, it's huge for me. It's an honour and privilege for me. And I want to thank all the coaches and all the players that we played together all those years and the coaches that coached me. And I believe that I'm representing all our Fijian rugby players.
Manu Samoa Great and the man they call the chiropractor because of his bone-crunching tackles. Mulyangatele Brian Lima says recognizing the island's rugby players now will be an incentive to future players to work towards.
It's a privilege and honour to be here and also inducted into the Hall of Pasifika Rugby Hall of Fame. When I look at going forward in the next few years, I'm sure the Pacific Island boys were looking forward to this. I inducted into the Hall of Fame, Rugby Hall of Fame in 2011, and this is the second one. It's a big one.
Former All Black great and Pasifika Hall of Fame board chairman, La'auli Sir Michael Jones, says the association now gives Pasifika Rugby the platform to push for representation at the decision-making table and bring real change for Pasifika people.
We have to be at the decision-making table. We have to be there on behalf of our people, Pasifika or Pasifika. I hope you're really getting this. Our ability to make a difference, not only for around rugby, but using it as a vehicle to make a difference for our people. I truly believe that. You know, we've got to believe that rugby is just the mechanism to bring real change for our people.
The seven inductees recognised at Eden Park in Auckland during the induction event were the late John Olomu, representing Tonga and New Zealand, the late Peter Fatialofa of Samoa, Waisale Serevi of Fiji, George Smith of Tonga in Australia, Mulyangatele Brian Lima of Samoa, Seuli Fiaoo Fa'a Mausili of Samoa in New Zealand, and Tui Fa'a Sisina Sir Brian Williams of Samoa and New Zealand.
That's Pasifika Ways for today. To listen back, head over to rnzi.com/programs. We're also on Spotify, Apple and iHeartRadio. From myself and the RNZ Pasifika team, till 5:34.